Welcome to the Roland Chris Blog Talk Radio Station, Pathways to Excellence, where we explore what it takes to meet and exceed the demands of managing a retirement plan in today's complex market. From regulatory developments to fiduciary news and practical tips, tune in to Roland Chris for your step-by-step guide to achieving compliance and confidence in a new fiduciary era. Now, let's begin today's show with an introduction from our Roland Chris host.
Welcome, everyone, for this podcast on the Pathways to Excellence channel, sponsored by Roland Chris. I am Christy Arthur, Director of Fiduciary Solutions at Roland Chris, and your host for today's podcast. Today, we are going to discuss the tangible impact of changes to ERISA law on retirement plans, or rather, the impact of those changes on the sponsors and administrators of retirement plans. And we will discuss how executives are already adapting to the new conflict of interest law. During our last podcast, we discussed the fee disclosure law, known across the industry as 408B2, and its impact on retirement plans, plan sponsors, and participants. ERISA law was designed as a guide for behavior, the behavior of those who will interact with, run, manage, and direct the assets of qualified retirement plans. Changes therein, such as 408B2 and the new conflict of interest rule, have been written to change behavior. This law is in place ultimately to protect the retirement outcomes of hardworking individuals across our nation. A challenge lies, however, in the manner in which the industry responds, often making light of or attempting to minimize the impact of such massive regulatory shifts. It is vital for the futures of countless American workers and the beneficiaries of their retirement outcomes that we all understand what ERISA commands of us. So during today's podcast, we are going to take a deeper dive into the truth behind these regulatory shifts, the most recent of which is the hugely impactful conflict of interest rule. Now, with me today in the studio is a returning and favored guest, Mr. Ron W. Hagen. I've asked Ron to return both because of his role in developing and implementing fiduciary standards as President and Chief Operating Officer of Roland Chris Fiduciary Services, but also due to the recent release of the final conflict of interest rule in April. Ron has a lengthy career in developing and managing the very retirement plan fiduciary processes that address a plan sponsor's requirements under ERISA, including her subsequent changes. Ron, thank you so much for returning it to the guest chair today, and welcome.
Thank you, Christy, and thanks so much for spending time to focus on this very important topic for employers to consider.
Absolutely, absolutely. I'm eager to dive into our hot new subject, the conflict of interest rule, but I believe we need to lay a bit of groundwork first because such regulatory shifts are not new to us, and yet our plan sponsors and plan administrators find themselves planted firmly in the spotlight again and again. So that being said, I want to talk a little bit about the why behind such changes. And Ron, you've long advised executive leadership and understanding fiduciary requirements under ERISA. Given your experience across this industry, why do we continue to see such significant shifts in ERISA law?
Christy, you're hitting on a key topic, a key issue, and it's not one that employers don't care about. It's really a matter of focused effort and really lack of resources or attention to it. Let me kind of dig down a little bit further. For the most part, regulation has a way of slowing down the marketplace, but at the same time, it's very important in these kinds of roles where you're looking out for others' best interest that there be a focus on what then standards or how do you then perform such a role as a fiduciary, making decisions for others who aren't able to make or given the opportunity to make those decisions, such as hiring service providers, determining the expenses or fees for those services. So really the spirit of the law under ERISA with regard to processes, control procedures, best interest, really weren't being met. And the Department of Labor and really congressional actions witnessed a lack of or a response to a lack of implementation, a lack of awareness, a lack of expertise, training, and resources. So the second key issue that was emerging over the past 10 to 15 years is that it was largely a supplier-driven market, buyers not having the resources or awareness to fully understand the complexities of hiring retirement plan service providers. There really was an information advantage for the suppliers or providers of those services and a disadvantage to those buyers of services. So in effect, the industry knew more about plans, retirement plans, than the employers did. And then the third thing that we're seeing with these new laws is that it's a spike towards increased accountability. There are enforcement provisions and teeth to ensure that participants' employees' best interests are being met.
Absolutely, absolutely. So, and Ron, I mentioned this a little bit earlier. Given everything you just said, you know, we may understand why we're here and the importance behind such changes, but as you mentioned, there's kind of an issue with information advantage for the industry, resources, training, and things of the like. We witness time and time again how the industry almost seems to kind of glean over these shifts. We've seen a lot of communications to plan sponsors and plan administrators indicating, don't worry, you're in good hands, everything is taken care of. And this mindset, while I believe laced with the best of intentions, really can prove to be quite perilous as we continue to see big hits in ERISA litigation despite all of the service providers that a plan sponsor may have in place that they think or they're kind of protecting them. Can you help our listeners understand the difference between what their service providers are really required to do and what they then, as plan sponsor and plan administrator, are required to do when these types of regulatory shifts occur?
Christy, the simplest way to describe it is that under ERISA, employer plan sponsors have the opportunity to delegate certain operational, administrative, and even fiduciary functions. These under ERISA, it's called prudent experts. Some are fiduciary, some are non-fiduciary. But what employer plan sponsors need to be careful of is believing or trusting that they can delegate all of their functions. And while we talk about information advantage on behalf of providers, I'm going to come at it from more of an optimistic perspective to say that there's for most of the providers out there, they're not trying to deceive plan sponsors. They're trying to create value and relevance to demonstrate that they can really help support the plan sponsor and their functions. However, what we're seeing is as the lack of awareness continues with the mounds of regulation that are going on, more plan providers, service providers, are beginning to add multiple fiduciary or fiduciary-like services, but they're functions that really aren't ultimately being taken away from the employer, the plan sponsor. So we talk a lot about understanding the roles and responsibilities in the fiduciary organizational chart. Spend a lot of time with that with employers so that they know what can be delegated and what can't be, and then how do they build around them procedures that ensure that they're doing what they need to be doing, they being the plan sponsors. So in essence, you can delegate investment fiduciary, you can delegate ministerial administrative functions, but ultimately signing away key approvals on the disposition of assets or final tax filings or demonstrating the monitoring of service providers' fees and contracts, those are things that, for the most part, only a plan administrator within a plan sponsor can perform.
Excellent, excellent points. And we see that quite a bit where you might have what is perceived to be an outsourcing when it's really more of a support service. They might be taking on the function but not necessarily the associated liability. So let's talk a little bit about what is happening right now. plan sponsors and plan administrators are starting to receive communications about the new rule. Our executive clients and committee members are already starting to discuss what this new conflict of interest rule is going to mean for them. Now, before we get into those specifics, can you give us some background as to why ERISA has been expanded to include specificity around conflicts of interest?
You bet, Christy. So if you go back to 2012, there was a fee disclosure rule known as 408B2. You've mentioned it already in this conversation. There is also a companion provision for participant fee disclosures, and that code section is 404A5. So plan sponsors that are listening in today have, for the last 3 years, 4 years, have been responsible for, one, reviewing and approving the participant statements that go out once a year to their participants. And the second piece of that, the 408B2, is a test that periodically the plan sponsor must go through to review those disclosures for adequacy and determine that the fees being paid from the plan out of participant accounts is indeed reasonable or that there's value. Okay? So when that was enacted in 2012, prior to that, for about 2 years, in the writing of that legislation, there was originally conflict of interest provisions were included in that, meaning there were tighter prohibited transaction exemptions, meaning processes to have to prove whether or not a conflict exists. And if one did and one wasn't checked out, then that would create a prohibited transaction in the plan. However, the final rule that was accepted was the conflict of interest language was removed, and it was really just a fee disclosure law. And while there was still highly impactful and necessary movements from that fee disclosure rule, the lawmakers, you can tell obviously now, were not satisfied that there wasn't a conflict provision. So in the conflict of interest rule, there's another name for it called the fiduciary rule. It is officially a conflict of interest rule. It addresses some key issues, but it effectively is a mandate that any advice provider, investment, product that's being offered to the plan must be a client first or have a fiduciary level of accountability to it. So you talked about bringing clarity to the retirement plan market. One had to do with fees, and 4 years later now, it has to do with conflicts of interest. And now those are binding plan sponsors and service providers to a greater level of accountability that there hasn't been in the past.
Excellent. So really almost like the second half of 408B2 is this new conflict of interest rule to expand upon those types of things that the DOL would like for plan sponsors and plan administrators to gain a greater awareness of. Ron, in our last podcast, we talked about what made 408B2 so impactful, and you've alluded to some of these things as we've talked today. And 408B2 felt very different than other requirements under ERISA. But I'm hearing that this conflict of interest rule really stands to be the most substantial change to ERISA law that we have experienced since its inception in 1974. Why is that? Why is this particular piece so impactful?
Well, Christy, what this does is for all of the investment advice providers, that being brokers who are registered reps offering investment products through a broker-dealer arrangement, or whether they are registered investment advisors under the 1940 Securities Act, regardless of the form of advice or entity through which advice providers are giving it, there's no more confusion with regard to investment advice. Going forward now, as of the new rule is effective June 7th, 2016, and we'll talk just a moment about the activation schedule beyond that, but it was finalized June 7th of 2016. And what it does is it resets the stage for who is a fiduciary, and that being any advice provider, broker, or investment advisor RIA providing investment recommendations for a fee is a fiduciary. There is no longer any non-fiduciary category for a broker that's servicing a plan in that capacity. They're all fiduciaries now. This has some in the industry, in the investment advice, leaving the ERISA market or significantly curtailing their services so that they're not even anywhere near the investment performance monitoring recommendation side of the business. They're more in the coordination of services or education to participants. So that's a big shift. And in fact, this rule actually modifies existing fiduciary definitions under ERISA Section 321, to be exact.
Excellent. So thank you, Ron. You mentioned activation of the role. Both the industry and plan sponsors have some time to prepare, but can you help us understand the key dates and what plan sponsors and plan administrators should be doing now to prepare for those dates?
Christy, this gets to the where the tires meet the road, and I think with plan sponsors, they need to understand two key dates. The first is April 10th, 2017, and the second is January 1st, 2018. So let me backfill in what those dates mean. April 10th, 2017, as we mentioned previously, the fiduciary definition of the conflict of interest rule is effective at that point. And that means that any investment advisor getting compensated for providing recommendations to the plan relative to investment lineup, those will be recognized and required as acknowledged by the advisor of their role April 10th, 2017. Okay, so there will be a few carve-outs within that fiduciary definition, and that will be identified in future tips that we'll provide. So that will give plan sponsors some additional understanding of what constitutes fiduciary advice or investment advice who's a fiduciary. The second big idea or requirement which will go into effect is the best interest contract exemption, or the BICE is the acronym. And as of January 1st, 2018, the BICE has to be qualified for, it's an exemption for handling rollovers from the plan to IRAs or non-ERISA accounts. So if a participant is being assisted in getting recommendations from an advice provider moving from the plan, if they've been terminated or they have a separation of service and they have a distributable event and they're rolling that over, then there are requirements that the advice provider must meet. And it's defined in what this best interest contract exemption. If they're getting advice and recommendation for what to do with their money, then the advice provider must engage contractually with the participant as a fiduciary, and they must also disclose the amount and type of fee that they're receiving. And so there's different disclosure requirements if the advice provider is getting paid a variable commission versus a level fee. And so what we're seeing here is the spirit of this new rule is to mitigate or eliminate biased advice based on compensation the advice provider is receiving. So those are really the two big ideas. The fiduciary definition, April 10th, 2017, is effective for all advisors who are providing recommendations regarding investments for the plan, and then advice providers assisting participants rolling over monies from plan to IRAs and non-ERISA accounts. That goes into effect January 1st, 2018. And again, we will be providing more guidance with regard to operationally how employer plan sponsors monitor those two big ideas with respect to this conflict of interest rule.
Excellent. And Ron, you mentioned tips, and those tips are a monthly email and web posting available through the Roland Chris website. and I heard you say that, that kind of going forward as we progress through the implementation of this conflict of interest rule, Roland Criss is going to be distributing even more tactical guidance on things like carve-outs and more the intimacies of this rule. So thank you for mentioning that. Ron, we covered a lot of vital information with you today, and we know there's much more to come. And we cannot thank you enough for being a resource for our listeners and for joining us yet again today and for sharing your insights and expertise. We love having you as a guest. So thank you so much for your time today.
My pleasure. Thank you, Christy.
Absolutely. Forum members, I thank you all as well for sharing your valuable time with us today. We hope you all can make plans to join us for our next podcast in August. Please stay tuned for an email as to the date, time, and topic of that event. And with that, we close today's forum session and thank you all for joining us. Have a fantastic day.